Good evening, I'm Paul Edwards in Miami, Florida, and welcome to tonight's edition of Tuesday Topics. I'd like to begin by thanking Rachel Bader, who's been away for a while but is back recording our presentation, and I'd like to thank Steve Bauer and Marlena for the work that they're doing. We'd also like to thank Talking Communities for making it possible for us to do this program by having created this software and having made it available to us. So George Buys and Talking Communities, we appreciate it. Tonight we're talking about convention planning, not which programs you attend. That's the easy stuff. But what kinds of plans should you make before you come? What should you bring? What are some of the kinds of things that you should remember? What are the things that we often find that people forget? Those are the sorts of things that we're going to discuss. There's a rule in Tuesday Topics that those of you who haven't been around for recordings may not know. One of those rules is that whoever suggests a topic is sort of the person who gets to be it. And our topic was suggested last week by Brian Charlson, so he gets the first opportunity to respond to my first question, and I should really make it difficult and ask him precisely how one should pack brassieres or something of that sort, but I'll make it a little easier for him. Brian, what do you think are some of the things that people coming to the convention for the first time might not think of that is worth talking about for a while?
Well, as I recall, by the way, I recommended that we talk about methods for keeping track of our wardrobes. Others mentioned more convention stuff, and somehow or other you as our host combined the two topics into what's before us. But I'm perfectly willing to start the ball rolling, as it were. To me, the first thing I have to keep in mind when packing is it's going to take a lot more space to pack for this kind of trip than it would under normal circumstances, because I'm going to have clothing that's appropriate for cruising around outside in the summertime in Florida, which means lightweight clothes. But I've also got to pack for living inside of a hotel, many of which are over air conditioned, and so I need to prepare to wear layers of clothes in order to reach a temperature that works for me throughout the course of an entire week at the convention. With the newer regulations that are out there with respect to packing bags, you have to make sure that you're going to zip them closed but not lock them shut, since they're going to be inspected. And you have to be very careful to stay underweight on your luggage. There's nothing more frustrating than to get there, hand in a piece of luggage, and find out it's 5 pounds overweight, and the answer is either a very hefty extra fee for those 5 pounds, or would you please open your bag and turn it into two somehow? So I'm very careful not to overpack, especially for these trips where you're taking enough goods that overpacking is an issue. This frequently means splitting things between suitcases rather than keeping them nicely organized and together. So each one of my bags contains items that tend to add up in quite a bit of weight pretty quickly. An example of that would be dog food, because my wife and I are both guide dog users. There's a significant amount of our baggage that is materials to support the dogs while we're traveling. Those are a few starter points anyway. Take both bags. Even if you think you might get away with one, take two and split things up to deal with the weight issue. And remember that although all of that went in when you packed to go to someplace, you're probably going to come back with more goods than you went with. So leave yourself a little extra space in there for the things you're going to bring back.
Brian, I'm actually going to come back to you because I really thought that the question that you were raising last week was how do you keep track of your wardrobe at convention? And so I'll simply ask you that question. What should people do when they're packing to try to keep outfits together?
Well, I'm not sure what other people should do, but I know that what I do is, prior to going to convention, I put together outfits on hangers. So I have a pair of slacks, a shirt, and a tie, all on a single hanger, because I end up wearing ties most of the time when I'm wearing clothes that I really much care what goes with what. I also, when I pack them, separate those outfits that go with a single sports jacket if I'm going to take a sports jacket along. So I might have three shirt outfits in a stack in the suitcase, separated by a sports jacket that's followed by three more shirts, followed by another sports jacket, in order to arrange that. And I'm always trying to come up with some way to take less if I possibly can, but also keep in mind that I'm going to probably get, you know, food on myself in the restaurant, end up wearing somebody else's drink in the middle of a cocktail hour or whatever, and going to need more change of clothes than there are days in the week. So I keep that in mind as well when I put those together. Now, in my household, we have a sighted boarder who double checks my work when it comes to putting together outfits. But at least in my initial putting together of outfits, I'm using a color identifier to help me figure out what color things are. I have in my hand right now the color set. Now, this is the color set 1. I just went on the APH, American Printing House for the Blind, website to find out what its current price is, and all I can find there is color set 2. So, keeping in mind that I'm working with a slightly older device, this thing is narrower than a television remote control, but about the same length, and only has 3 buttons across the top. I'm going to tap the top button to wake it up. There you go, the top button. Now I'm pointing it at my shirt and pressing a button, and I have to hold it up against the shirt so that there's no light that gets in. Press the button. That's the color of the T-shirt I'm currently wearing because it's 80 degrees here and I'm not going to wear anything heavier than a T-shirt. And I can point at my shorts.
Very dark brown, deep brown.
And this lovely lady's voice tells me the color of things. So I use that to identify the colors of slacks, the colors of shirts. It doesn't work nearly as effectively in selecting ties, because ties come in so many colors. So I touch it in a half a dozen different places and try to remember what ties I have that fit that combination. Again, I use a sighted person to double-check my work, especially if that's one of the options that I have and I'm packing and I've got to look good at some formal event. That would be one example. I have another color identifier here that's a simpler one. That one, by the way, the color color set 2 now runs on the APH catalog much higher than I paid for my original. My original, I think, was something like $300. They now run $600+. This one is called the Color. I may have the name slightly wrong. I was reading it with a scanner, and I'm not sure whether or not it got blurred up. This is more like the size of a... Well, what comes to mind is one of those stick deodorants, like a men's stick deodorant. I took the cap off of it. I'm holding it against my shirt, pressing down.
Gray.
And you heard the color. I'm going to hold it against my shorts, press it down.
Light blue.
It swears my shorts are light blue. Let's see if it's right. The other one, remember, said brown. Let's try that again.
Light blue.
It insists my shorts are light blue. So which one's right? I find this one to be more accurate when it comes to standard colors, the color, and the other one to be more accurate when it comes to things like fancier colors for shirts like lilac and those kinds of things. So those are some of the things that I do to keep my clothes straight when traveling.
It's pretty cool. I like the lady's voice better. I have this this vision of trying it on toast or meat. I wonder if that would work. We've heard from a man, someone who has a reputation in ACB of always being fastidiously dressed and always doing a wonderful job of turning herself out well, and someone who's probably also a pretty good planner, is another board member of ACB, Miss Billie Jean Keith. Billie Jean, would you perhaps have some hints for us in terms of packing? Maybe some that would apply more to the ladies among us?
Well, I can speak for me, but the color thing is a good idea, but there's such a contrast between light blue and dark brown. I'm puzzled with Brian's. I would get confused, but I have a Colorino from APH. It's a cheaper version, and I find that I need to hold it in the natural light near a window, and it will tell me the colors and pretty well, and I still have a little bit of it to be able to see color, which is very helpful. But I never take enough warm clothes when I go somewhere. You think Florida, you're going to wear all your white, pretty tropical shirts and things like that, and then you get there and you're free and you've got 6 pairs of sandals and 1 pair of sensible shoes, and you there have been times when I borrowed sweaters from people because I just, well, I'm learning after 20 years of attending cold convention, but I do love attending the convention, but I just think they make them way too cold.
Billie Jean, one of the questions that I suspect some people might have is, how ought one to dress at a convention? is it okay for women to bring only shorts and that kind of thing and wear shorts all the way through the week? Should women wear slacks and skirts a lot of the time? What proportion of dresses do people need to bring? What kind of a decision ought people to make in terms of trying to determine what proportion of the time they should dress which way?
Well, I've seen everything, I think, among some of the people who attend the convention, but I wouldn't wear shorts unless it was a beach party or something like that. I think you ought to dress as if you were attending a conference that has meaning to one, and just being sloppy and wearing jeans and cutoffs and things like that, I just don't think it speaks well for us. And I like to, I don't dress up in a business suit, but I certainly wear trouser suits, and I do wear skirts and dresses. I like to dress up in the evening, especially if I'm going out to dinner, and because my husband will be here with me this year, I will get to go out to dinner because he's the planner. I'm the one who just gets talking to people, and I don't plan sometimes.
Would anybody else, perhaps from the female side, maybe Rachel, do you have thoughts on women's clothing and what people should pack and whatnot?
Hi, Guy. This is Patty Sarkey, and I think this will be my 15th or 16th convention, and I don't wear shorts either, Billie Jean. I just don't feel comfortable in them. But I like to dress semi-professional dresses and skirts. I always carry blazers with me, lightweight blazers or cotton cardigan, because of the air conditioning, and comfortable shoes, but not flip-flops. And slacks are fine with a top and a blazer or a sweater. And I don't think I would go there, though I were going to a, you know, high-fashion job. But I also think that our attire carries our image. And maybe I'm kind of hung up on that. But if I look good, I feel good, and that's just one of the things I've always strived for. Keep my dog nice and well-groomed and cleaned and dress appropriately for the occasion. I hope that helps.
This is Rachel, and I would just echo what they're saying here. I tend to do kind of nice casual. The two conventions I've been to have both been in pretty warm weather. I tend to do kind of nice casual during the day, but definitely do bring shorts and comfortable shoes in case you do walk out in the evenings or want to get out some and go to some of the places around where the convention's being held.
Brian, just from a guy's point of view, or any other guy who'd like to jump in on this, do guys bring shorts? I know I've never been brave enough to bring shorts to a convention. I've always felt that I'm doing a service to mankind by avoiding wearing shorts. But do any guys bring shorts?
Oh, I've heard many people mention people who wear them, but I don't remember anybody mentioning people wearing them admiring the fact that they were wearing them. And so I make a point. I wear shorts around the house, but I don't wear shorts out in public generally. Maybe if I were had a more positive body image, I'd feel otherwise. But I really don't think so. The real issue is you're going to be in air conditioning all day long when indoors, and when outdoors, if you are a northerner and pale white like I am from Boston, you go to Florida, you're going to be exposing yourself to a mite bit more sun than you're used to. And so it's a matter of safety to keep yourself covered up a little bit. I do bring more casual shirts and those kind of things if the circumstances allow for that kind of wearing. I almost reverse pack. You know, I know I'm going to be going to the banquet, so I bring an outfit that's one of my nicer outfits, not quite tuxedo, but a nice suit kind of outfit for the banquet. And if I'm speaking someplace at one of the affiliate meetings or something along those lines, again, I'll wear a sports jacket for that. I wear a tie probably three-fourths of the time during the day, though it may not stay on me all day, depending on, again, the nature of the air conditioning in the hotel and the like. I'm not there to be miserable throughout the time that I'm there.
There's another issue that I want to focus on for a little while. Every time we go to convention, we hear horror stories about people whose luggage is lost. And my question to those who are experienced convention packers is, are there some specific things that you would recommend that people put in their carry-on? If there are, what sorts of things are they, and maybe a little bit of a rationale?
Absolutely carry any medications in your carry-on. Never let them out of your sight. It's amazingly difficult to replace them while traveling. And that's a good time, by the way, if you're used to keeping track of what med is what by where you place it in the medicine cabinet, when you place it into your luggage, is a very good time to work out a labeling system to tell the difference between one med and another med. Those who are diabetics and use insulin, before you go to the convention, you had better be making arrangements for refrigeration for your supplies, or for that matter, if you're taking some med that recommends that it keep refrigerated. Don't assume there's going to be a refrigerator in your room. You have to make plans for that. The other thing, as a guide dog user, I always take 2 days worth of food for the dog in there. Again, anticipating something might get misrouted. I remember one time when Kim went to a meeting of the Braille Authority of North America up in Canada, she had her suitcase impounded with all the guide dog food in it. And it turned out that it was actually impounded because there was dog food in it that was beef-based. This was during some part of the mad cow disease business. Again, I ended up having to ship her food from Boston to Toronto. And it wasn't easy, and it wasn't inexpensive. So I always pack extra food to cover a couple of days while you are trying to make arrangements for replacement food if you're a guide dog handler.
And this is Rachel. I would say this may go without saying for some people, but just remember to not pack anything valuable in your suitcase. Sometimes we had one instance where someone brought some equipment to use for during the convention, and it was lost, and the airlines will not replace anything that is lost as a result of lost luggage if it's valuable. So keep anything that might be valuable with you. At the same time, though, you want to try to pack as light as possible because there are instances where carry-ons can be difficult, especially if you have a guide dog, to try and navigate with your carry-on and with your guide dog. And sometimes the carry-ons can be they might ask you to put them under the plane if they are over a certain height or weight, too. So some things that you may think are carry-ons may not be considered to be by the airline. So keep it as small as possible, but pack everything that you would need there.
I'd also add, by the way, that if you're usually a winter traveler and you're used to getting away with bringing a little extra onto a plane, don't plan on that for summer travel. The nature of heat and takeoff weights and those kinds of things with airliners are different during the summer than they are during the winter. Of course, planes are more likely to be packed during the summer months than they are during the winter months in terms of passengers. So they get much more restrictive about what they let you take on during summer travel.
Thanks, Brian. A couple of things that I'd add to the carry-on list. I'm an electronics person, and those of us who are, I would urge you, if you're going to have a need to use note takers and that kind of thing, even though you may not like the idea, pack your chargers in your carry-on as well, because there's nothing more awful than to have this major presentation to do and then find that you simply cannot find a charger that works with the particular device that you're trying to use. B conventions are, in fact, probably not quite as dangerous because you can usually find somebody else who has the same device as you do and can often find a charger that you can at least borrow for a while. So as not to go to that extreme, my advice is if you possibly can, throw electronic chargers and that kind of thing in carry-ons. And I never pack note takers in a suitcase if I can possibly help it. I just have this vision of them disappearing into the darkness, never to be seen again. We've talked a little bit about the things that you need in your carry-on. Let's talk for a moment about dog guides and some of the special needs that you may have in terms of things that you need to bring for them and the ways that you need to plan your dog guides convention. Why don't you lead off again, Brian, and then if there's another dog guide user, please jump in. What sorts of things does a dog guide user need to be thinking about before they come to convention?
Well, the first thing is that your dog is probably going to be in a more stressful situation than normal. I don't know anybody who's associated with 200 or 300 guide dogs during the course of a week. It's a fairly rare occurrence. So come prepared with that in mind. One, make sure that you don't feed your dog or water your dog anything for 3 hours before departure. It takes about 3 hours for them to fully empty. Two, like I said, remember to bring food, that kind of thing, any meds necessary for your dog in your carry-on as you would for yourself. Three, always bring along many, many more scrap bags than you think you might need for cleaning up after your dog. And I would suggest that if you're used to using some product for dealing with accidents, that this is a good time to bring that along with you. While nobody thinks their dog's going to have an accident, all of us who have attended conventions know it happens, and it happens unfortunately too frequently while at convention. When at convention, whenever there's a change of I'm going to go from one meeting to another or from one space to another, always plan on taking your dog out. You cannot take your dog out too frequently during convention. You just don't know whether the next 3 hours is going to give you a chance to do it. So just like the military says before, whenever you can, do. The same thing is true for taking a dog out. Whenever you can, do, and there'll be multiple places for that to happen. I would recommend that while I'm sure everybody is good about giving their dogs all the meds and flea protection and the like on a regular basis, that they make a point the week before going to convention to make sure the dog is properly dealt with in terms of flea protection. Not that you're going to pick it up from other dogs so much. I have not had that experience. But you are going to Florida, where there is probably a higher level, if you're a northern person, of fleas and that kind of stuff in the general environment. So come prepared. You're having your dog properly prepared to avoid all of those kinds of hassles. I would bring along an extra leash because those things can easily be misplaced and you'll drive yourself crazy trying to find one. I'd bring along, if you have it, a collapsible water bowl so you can get your dog water wherever you are without having to run back to the room. Sometimes running back to the room is a good 20-minute exercise, so something that you can fold up and carry with you to give your dog water while in one of the public restrooms is a good idea as well.
The one thing I would add to that, too, is that being in Florida, you might want to give your dogs more opportunity for water because, especially being if you're from the north, being in the heat, the dogs are going to need more water just as you probably will. So just as Brian said, take the dog out more often, give them more opportunities for water. If at all possible, give the dogs more of an opportunity to kind of de-stress while you're at the convention because they are dealing with a lot of other dogs and a lot of other blind people and a lot of other challenges that aren't dealt with on a regular basis. The dogs can easily get stressed out just like a person can. So give them a little more attention when you get a little bit of downtime. Give them a little bit of time to de-stress if you get a chance, just so that you can kind of keep things even and going throughout the week.
The only other thing I missed, Brian, was a feeding dish because the ice buckets just don't cut it. And we need to have the feeding dishes for the dogs. And if you said it, I apologize, but I didn't hear it.
We always take with us grooming tools and groom our dogs on a regular basis, especially when traveling, but just as general practice. Whatever you do at home, you're going to want to do it probably twice as much when you're traveling. I also forgot to mention that because dogs are drinking water that is not their home water, you might also want to take along with you anything to help with an upset stomach of your dog. So I usually take along something like Pepto-Bismol tablets and feed those to my dog if I feel that they're experiencing any stomach problems during the trip. Again, Patty, you're right. We've had two kinds of things that have happened by guide dog users, often enough to create a problem. So that's the only reason we're bringing it up here, not because it happens with every guide dog user, but it happens with enough that it's an issue. And that is, one, bring your own food bowls and the like. If you use an ice bucket as a guide dog food container, you have just bought yourself an ice bucket and it will be on the bill. And if you play tug of war with your dog, you may have bought yourself a towel as well if you're using that for a tug of war toy with your dog. It's great to bring toys along. Again, take the time to allow them to deal with their stress, especially by giving them that extra bit of attention. It's easy to get so involved in what we're doing that we forget the dog's needs. So you really, really need to take the time to pull that off.
One of the questions that some guide dog users ask is, when they come to a convention, should guide dog users bring canes as well? By de-stressing, are you suggesting any of you dog guide users that it's sometimes good actually to give the dog some time off, to give them some downtime in the room while you go somewhere else?
Yeah, I would. Now, I would say that only if you have someone else in your room that might be able to stay with the dog while you're away. I'm not suggesting that you leave the dog in the room unattended. In fact, I'm suggesting that you not, because the dog may not appreciate that and, have some anxiety for you being away. But if there's someone that is in the room and you're able to give the dog a little bit of downtime, if you feel the dog needs that, you know, every dog is different. Just kind of pay attention to the signs. If your dog's seeming tired or stressed out and is comfortable with the other person, then you might need that time away too, to just get out and not have to worry about the dog. So I would bring a cane. The other thing I would bring a cane for is, God forbid, something happened to your dog. This happened several weeks ago where I was in a situation where my dog was unable to work for a day. I still had to get around to where I needed to go, and if I didn't have a cane, I would not have easily been able to do that. So God forbid something happened to your dog, at least you could get around with a cane if you needed to.
I think that, again, keeping in mind that every dog is different, given a choice, I'd rather have somebody dog sit for me than to leave my dog in the room alone. If you have to have a guide dog that is a very quiet dog and doesn't bark and those kind of things, it's no big deal to leave them in your room. But boy, it is a big deal if you leave your dog unattended in a room and it's a barker. It's going to cause some serious problems with the hotel, with other guests around you. I would say never, never leave your dog in your room after, say, about 9 p.m. unattended. People have every right to expect that things are going to be reasonably quiet in the room next door after hours, and a barking dog when you're in a hotel just doesn't cut the mustard. If you do have to leave your dog in your room unattended, make a point of having that do not disturb sign marked in some way so that you can place it on your doorknob indicating not to enter here. I know of at least 3 cases in the last 20 years attending ACB conventions where people have had their dogs make an escape when, say something like the staff that are cleaning the rooms, the maid staff, open the door to come turn down the bed and find a loose dog in the room and panic. And the door doesn't close rapidly enough and the dog's in the hall, and next thing you know, they've taken an elevator ride. So, again, judicial use of leaving your dog in the room and using the do not disturb sign would really be helpful.
I've actually seen guide dogs open the room door, so you shouldn't leave the dog in the room alone anyway, if at all possible. Besides, the dog is a pack animal, and if it's separated from the leader, it feels left out. And leaving the dog alone like that, you're actually increasing its angst rather than decreasing it.
My name is Candace Steppens, and I just joined the chat a few minutes ago. I won't be attending convention, but I find this chat very interesting. I'm also a guide dog user, and I've recently joined the Austin chapter of about 2 months ago, and I have attended ACB national conventions in the past.
Well, welcome. If you have something to contribute, by all means speak up. You sound great, and welcome to our chat.
By the way, this is Candace Steppen again, and I met you, Paul, years ago at an ACB convention, a state convention. I believe it was in San Antonio. And we talked for quite a while on the bus on the way to a dinner cruise, I think it was.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I think you'd just gotten out of school then, and we sat next to each other on the bus. I remember, Candace. At least I'm pretty sure that's the one. People are sometimes a little uncertain about how much help they can expect once they get to a convention hotel. how much help can people expect, and what should people expect to be able to do on their own? Can you get a volunteer to help you with virtually anything?
No, you can't. And I have to say, Paul, that in years past, I have attended conventions pretty much on my own. My parents have kind of been there as a backup, but I don't expect them to help me with anything. And if I have questions or a problem that I might need assistance with, I might either, one, go to the hotel desk, or two, if I can't find a volunteer, then try to work it out on my own as best as I can. You can't ask a volunteer for everything.
I'd agree that, generally speaking, you can anticipate more persons at the beginning of the convention needing more help than they're going to need toward the end of the convention once they get oriented to the hotel and room layout and those kind of things. The kinds of things you should be very comfortable asking for is when you're brought up to your room with your baggage, having somebody orient you to the services in the room, like what, how to use the phone, how to use the remote control on the television, how to use the controls for the air conditioning and heating. You know, what's the shampoo versus the hand cream in the bathroom if you're planning to use it? How to use the coffee maker? Those kinds of first-time orientation activities. Be prepared to tip the staff for that kind of service, but by all means, those are appropriate things to ask them. It's certainly appropriate to ask for assistance when dealing with issues that any other guest might need at the front desk or at the concierge desk, getting a cab, if you're going to go to some other place than the hotel for dinner or whatever, those kinds of things. There's going to be volunteers milling about. They'll identify themselves as volunteers and ask if they can help you. This does not mean help pick out your clothes for the evening. None of the volunteers are, in fact, allowed to do anything more than assist you in finding your way to the elevator and those kind of things. They're not allowed to go into your rooms and assist you there, so don't anticipate that kind of assistance. They certainly will assist you in finding the restaurant and in finding different places about the hotel. If you find yourself in an emergency situation, you know, you have just stepped in an accident of a guide dog or something like that, that's always appropriate to ask for help in dealing with those kinds of things. I would say, in general, though, you should try to be as independent in a hotel as you are at home, and learn your way about and not always anticipate that every time you step out of your door, there's going to be somebody to show you your way to wherever you're going.
I think the other thing we should stress is there are a lot of kind of veteran convention people who are very prepared to help people who are first-timers at conventions, too. So if you have a concern, feel free to ask for help, but try to do so in an appropriate and in a reasonably polite way. There's nothing that makes people less willing to help someone than someone presuming that they have a right to expect that help and right now and getting angry when it doesn't happen immediately. I think that's the biggest turnoff for both volunteers and also veteran convention people about some new folks. They have this expectation that because they're blind or visually impaired, someone is going to immediately be there and drop everything they're doing to look after their needs. And that doesn't work. You need to be polite, and you need to ask, not demand.
I hear Pam Shaw's voice as you say things like that, because she often tells us, read your newspaper, read your program, because you're asking us all the things that are in there.
and that's actually a good point. There is always a lot of information in the ACB program. In the ACB program, there's certainly information about the way the phone system works, about information about the hotel. There are sometimes information about some of the other things that are located in the neighborhood. And at our convention, you'll usually be able to find information at the information desk about where grocery stores are, where restaurants are, and of course can get help from both people from Florida, who are almost always going to be there, and also from veteran information people. The other thing that Billie Jean mentioned, which is worth talking about for a second, is we do publish a daily newspaper, which also has information about events and about room changes and a range of other things. And it's a really good idea to check that out every day, because it's going to tell you that a place you'd planned to go has had a room change, and you're going to end up going to the wrong place unless you've had an opportunity to take a look at your newspaper.
Yeah, I can appreciate that, because like you're talking about, veteran conventioners ask fewer questions than brand new ones. And the other thing I have an advantage over a lot of y'all in this room is I've been to Jacksonville before. Now, next year in Minnesota, I'll be on equal footing with the majority. But I've been to Jacksonville in personal time before, so those of you who've been to a given city in the past on your own free time, use what you've already learned about that city to your advantage.
Thanks, Karen. So we've talked a little bit about what people can expect. Let's talk a little bit about relationships and conventions. I don't know. There are some people who go to conventions really hoping that a relationship will start, but then sometimes that relationship starts and the person who's involved in that relationship is not really the person of your dreams, and you'd really just as soon that it end. And no matter what you do, that person keeps following you around or keeps doing inappropriate things. How would you guys recommend that somebody deal with that?
That's a tough one, Paul, because I kind of had that experience when I attended my first national convention in Greensboro. There was a guy that just wouldn't leave me alone, and I finally asked him very politely to leave and to not find me in general sessions, because he was looking for me in general sessions, and he would follow me around the hotel, and I was just thought it was very inappropriate. But when I told him to leave me alone, he basically didn't come looking for me anymore.
There are two things that I would suggest to folks. One of them is, when you're in a situation like that and you really are very uncomfortable, try to find some buddies who you can be with if you possibly can. That's one of the best ways of assuring that nothing untoward happens. And if you really are receiving attentions that are unwanted and most of the traditional approaches don't work, my advice to you is go ahead and call security in the hotel and indicate that somebody is simply bothering you, and you would really appreciate security coming and talking with that individual and having them stop. Because you're not at a convention to be forced to hide from somebody. You're at a convention to try to have a good time. But obviously, I'm a male, and that may be a quick and dirty solution. Billie Jean, can you think of something else that a lady might do if they really felt uncomfortable and threatened by a situation like that?
I wouldn't hesitate to call security. I think that is your best bet, because they'll keep a watch on your room and make sure that nobody's harassed. It's a frightening experience because, well, not that that has happened to me at a convention, but it is very frightening if you think someone is just, it's a stalker type feel. No.
But you have to have the, what's the right word, assertiveness, I guess, to be pretty clear about what you do want. Don't be concerned about hurting somebody's feelings. If somebody just creeps you out a little bit, get out of their way and tell them that enough is enough.
Not that anything like this would happen at convention either, but anytime you're around large groups of people, it is possible, but it's your safety is what's most important. I am a rad student, I don't mind saying that, and I hope nobody at convention finds out what I know about rad. That stands for rape, aggression, and defense.
Good evening, everyone. I know I just joined in, but I'd just kind of like to add on to what Billie Jean said. I think one of the important things to remember is that if there is somebody following you, pestering you, whatever, yes, get security, but don't go into a secluded area in order to do that. If you're the only one in the, might you be the only one in your corridor going back to your room to call, go immediately to the lobby. The lobby, there's always people there. The one thing you want never to do is end up in a situation where you and the person who's bothering you are the only two in a situation, are the only two in a particular location. So always try to get to the lobby, to the restaurant, someplace where you know that there are going to be other people.
Thanks, Terry. Good advice. And that, for those of you who don't know, is Terry Pacheco. But I want to back up from heinous situations. You're somebody who hasn't been very involved in your local affiliate, but you want to learn more about ACB. You have a chance to go to a national convention. You're by yourself. You really don't know very many people. what are good ways that you as a kind of a newbie at convention can use to get to know other people? What are appropriate ways of setting up kind of good and effective kind of social interchanges once you get to?
I would think that one of the best ways is to look at the program and find some of the events that you might be interested in, maybe some of the special interest groups. Maybe if you're a guide dog user, look at those events that are put on by GDUI, or if you're into amateur radio, look at those types of events and kind of gravitate toward the events that are going to be attended by people who have some of the same interests. That is always a good way to start, because then you have something in common and can work from there. The other thing I would say is, if you have a group from your state, there are always meetings like caucuses that you could possibly get involved in and hear what the candidates have to say. Each state gets together in those meetings, and that's a good opportunity to kind of meet up with everybody from your state as well, and also find out what the candidates have to say about the issues.
I always mention to people to go to the first-timers meetings, and they're usually on Saturday and Sunday, and really, you do get a good overview of what the kind of the rules are, in a way, that you can attend any meeting you wish, except for the nominating committee meeting, and I always thought that's just really nice information. It gave you a sense of freedom. And I think people standing in a line for breakfast when there's a lot of people, you can meet a lot of people that way, just speaking to the person behind you in front of you.
I always met a lot of people, like you said, in line at the restaurant, on elevators, of course, in general sessions. And also, you were talking about your state affiliates. And, you may not know everybody that's a member of ACB in your state, and so when you're sitting in general session, that's also a great way to meet people from your state, before the meeting starts.
The other thing about the first-timers meetings that's kind of cool is that you get a chance usually to hear people introduce themselves, and so you've got a kind of an idea of somebody who sounds sort of cool. And remember that these guys are in the same situation as you are. They're here for the first time too. So, often you can really strike up a friendship with one of those first-timers where you can both kind of explore together as newbies, and it's kind of a cool way to do things. The other thing that I'd recommend, even though it's kind of noisy and kind of icky, but on the first Saturday evening of the convention, there's always a welcome to ... party that's hosted by the host affiliate. Going to those actually gives you a chance to meet some other people in a really informal kind of setting. So even though it's usually kind of crowded and sometimes a little noisy, you can often get to meet some people by going to that as well. How about money? Do people have financial advice for folks getting ready to plan for the convention? How much money should you bring? What should you expect to do? Should you use checks? Should you use credit cards? How much cash should you carry?
I use traveler's checks myself.
This is Patty, and I use credit cards more than carrying cash. And in cash denomination, I try not to give out too many 20s. Or 10, keep everything within 1s and 5. This way you stand less of a chance of people cheating you. We hate to think the world is that way, but unfortunately it is. So I carry a lot of 1s and a lot of 5s, a few 10s, and I hide the 20s. Use a credit card, put as much on my room tab as I can, and minimize transference of cash.
I don't use cash much at all, because if you use a credit card, then you've got a written record for tax purposes and all that of what you spent.
Any thoughts about how people ought to budget? I mean, how much does it cost to go to a convention? How should you figure on that?
I think my convention week usually ends up being just under $1,000.
Yeah, and I think that's about right. I think you need to recognize that hotels are pretty expensive places to eat, and even though there are a number of restaurants near this hotel, as it happens, and walking to them is relatively straightforward and relatively traffic-free, it still is going to be pretty expensive, and I think most of the time you've got to figure that you're going to spend $50 a day for food or so if you're eating three meals, and you're going to spend $80 a day for your room, plus anything else that you're going to buy. So right there, you've gone over $1,000 without even trying very hard. My convention's a little more expensive than that because I don't find myself able to avoid all of the temptations of what's available in the exhibit hall.
I'd say about $50 a day. There are a couple of ways that you can economize. Paul, is there a grocery store anywhere near the hotel?
Actually, there will be information on a grocery store that's, if my memory serves me correctly, about 3.5 blocks away.
So if you are the kind of person who needs to economize in order to attend, then you might want to take a trip to the grocery store early on in the week and stock up on stuff, especially to take the place of going out to breakfast, things like granola bars and that kind of stuff. You might also, and I do this when we were talking about packing before, I forgot to mention that we always take with us snack food, you know, packages of peanuts and raisins and dried fruit and, you know, whatever, those kinds of things along with us. Yes, we take junk food too, so I'm not claiming to be a perfect little camper when it comes to such things. But the likelihood that you're going to get a regular three meals a day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner at anything close to regular time is pretty unlikely at convention. If you're going to eat outside of the hotel, it's going to take you longer in most cases than eating inside the hotel because of getting there and getting back again. If you can eat during non-regular times, it's easier in the hotel. There can be some pretty horrific wait lines during convention for meals, especially lunch. To try to get lunch in between the end of general session and the beginning of a special interest session is, I won't call it impossible, but it's highly unlikely. So you need to keep that in mind, too, as you do your planning.
Is ACV still having their breakfast bar and lunch cafe at the convention this year?
Yes, I think so. The quick meal is a very economic way to get a bagel or something and have coffee in your room.
So we've talked about the cost of convention. We've talked a little bit about making friends and that sort of thing. Let's spend a little bit of time talking about getting back and packing to get back. My experience has been, as Brian said at the beginning, that you actually end up acquiring more stuff. Do other people do as I do and actually bring an extra suitcase? Because that's what I do. I have a soft side or smaller suitcase, and I simply pack it inside another of my suitcases so it's there, because I have an expectation that I'm going to collect a bunch of crud and bring it back.
I have run into the same problem in most of my travel, and I've learned to roll my garments. For some reason, I can't roll them going out because I just don't believe that they're going to be wrinkle-free. But on the way back, it doesn't really matter. And when you roll things properly, you can fit a lot more in your baggage. But there again, beware of the weight. Can anyone quote me just what is the weight limit per bag, please? I get different numbers. I get 50 pounds and 80 pounds.
The correct answer these days is 50. I have decided that it's an inherent part of my convention experience that I'm going to leave one thing behind. But I would urge people to not try and pack at the last minute if you can possibly avoid it. Take a little bit of time, give yourself enough time to check every single surface, and then check every single surface again, because invariably in your first sweep you're going to miss something. Are there some other issues surrounding convention that we haven't touched on yet that people think it would help someone who's considering coming to our convention to talk about?
One thing I would just remind people is that if you do plan on spending any time outside here in Florida, walking to places or whatever, especially during the day, add sunscreen to what you bring to the convention. It's probably been said in different places, but just as a reminder, because if you're not used to the Florida sun, you don't want to end up with a sunburn and then really freeze in that AC.
Thanks, Rachel. Sunscreen.
Also, I find that a lot of the general sessions are cold as a meat locker. My sweater will be with me.
I think it's also very difficult to keep a room at, especially a room as large as we need for general session, to keep it where it's going to be comfortable for everyone. I have to confess, I'm one of those people that doesn't get cold. It's never cool enough for me, practically.
I'm with Terry. You cannot have a room too cold for me. I would probably perfectly comfortably live in a meat locker. It's much more fun to sort of snuggle under covers and live in a meat locker than it is to experience a room that's too hot.
One of the other things, though, that I'd like to bring up, Paul, is I think especially for people who this may be their first or second convention, don't overdo. Don't overplan out. Or when you're planning it, be sure to plan in some downtime. I know I have to take, like, Wednesday nights and just regroup usually. That just happens to be my time when I tend to kind of crash. And but I think everybody needs to plan in, if while you're planning your itinerary, plan a few hours or of time when you can just kick back in your room and relax. Because it is like a marathon. It really can get grueling if you do overplan your events.
Well, some people say don't sign up for so many and then get tickets when you're there, because you might find you've overscheduled yourself.
Well, I don't know. I know I always buy tickets for certain things that I never get to, and most notably that's true of the folk thing. I'm happy to see you're not having it this year, so it's an event that I won't have to not go to. I think all of us end up buying tickets that we don't use, and I think that all we can do in terms of that is shrug our shoulders and say, well, that's the way it is. The other thing is, don't worry if you find you can't do everything. There are a lot of people who sort of stress over the fact that they're missing something. Well, inevitably you're going to at ACB conventions, because at any given time there will often be five or six different things going on, any three of which might be of interest to you.
It's true, and when you buy a ticket, you're supporting the event anyway, even if you can't get to it, or you can pass it on to someone else.
That's a very good point. I know I buy tickets for affiliates because I want to put a little bit of extra money in their treasury, even if I know I can't be sometimes at their meeting. I think the other thing that I would say is that we haven't talked about yet is the exhibit hall.
So when it comes to exhibits, we talked earlier about timeout for dogs, and I found that trying to use my guide dog through a very, very busy exhibit hall, while it means that I don't run into so many things as I might if I was using a cane, the fact is I frequently go right past the exhibitors I want to visit. So I'm constantly playing where is something in the hall? So I tend to be a cane user when I'm in the exhibit hall. Keep in mind that I think people, how do I say this nicely? I run into people who are a little more aggressive in the exhibit hall than I do elsewhere. So if you really need to see something or want to see something, don't be so polite that you let other people cut in front of you five times in a row. You're never going to see anything under those circumstances. You really have to take your place in a line to see a given vendor if they're very popular and the like. Just kind of insist that you're taking your rightful place, and anybody who wants to see them after you is fine. Line up behind.
This year, we are trying a new calendar with the exhibit hall. I don't know if everyone's aware, but exhibits are going to be open through Thursday this year instead of Wednesday. So that kind of may let up a little bit on the long lines that Brian refers to. People will be able to kind of spread out and get a little bit more opportunity this way. We're going to see how it works out this year.
What I would say as far as the exhibit hall is, if you're not sure where something is, I've always found that anybody, even if they're at an exhibit, has always been willing to direct you to another table if need be.
The other thing, too, is this year in the entrance, be sure and stop by the entrance to the exhibit hall. Mike and Allison Smitherman are working very hard on an enhanced directory to the booths and exhibits, and I think you'll find a lot more information there and more information on how to get to some of the particular booths.
If you can get there early enough while there are still copies of the enhanced exhibitor list, my recommendation is that you go and get that and then back off. Go out and get yourself a cup of coffee and take a look at that list. Try to identify those areas that you want to see. Try and see if you can get a clear idea of where they are in the exhibit area. You'll end up saving yourself a lot of time. And it actually makes some sense to make a list of the specific places that you want to go in the exhibit area and to kind of plan where they are in terms of putting together the order that you want to go in. It can often save you an immense amount of time. The other plea that I would make is those documents disappear pretty quickly. And if you're finished with yours, if you're done with the exhibit hall, it would be really cool if you could actually take it back to Michael and Allison and say, look, here's my Braille enhanced directory for somebody else to use. Other convention issues to sort of wind our program towards a close.
Well, this is Gary Wood from Lansing. Again, not going to be at the convention. But one thing I've noticed that when I've gone on trips, and I think probably most people do, I look forward to the experiences that I've been involved with. But as I think that Brian mentioned, and maybe others that with their guide dogs, but I think with people that there's usually more stress when you're at convention or on a trip of some sort. And you have to be aware of those things, I would think, if you're going to be doing things away from home and being aware that the things, as much fun as it'll be, that there will be more stress in some cases. So I imagine the suggestion I suppose I'd have would be that people should make themselves aware of that fact.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for all of your contributions this evening to helping newcomers to convention get an idea of what goes on there. I very much appreciate everyone's input and look forward to seeing many of the voices who we've heard tonight actually at our convention in Jacksonville later this summer. I think what's come out of all of it is that it's a very full week with lots to do, a real opportunity to get to meet some pretty cool people, and a place that nevertheless requires some planning if you're going to do well with it. So enjoy yourself at ACB's convention this summer in Jacksonville. All of us who are here look forward to seeing you there, and we look forward to seeing you next week on Tuesday Topics. Next week on Tuesday Topics, we'll be talking about an organization called National Industries for the Blind. This is an organization that works with agencies all over the country to try to create jobs for blind and visually impaired people. They've also created some innovative leadership training programs and have moved away from the traditional model of assembly line positions towards service-oriented jobs. We'll try to find out what's in their future and how they're changing the old jobs to make them better as well. So join us to find out more about National Industries for the Blind and all the cool new jobs they're developing and the way they're doing older jobs better on Tuesday Topics on ACB Radio, the voice of the blind community.